Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. Always a pleasure.
How would you describe what happened to the stock markets this week?
Well, it was very scripted. You know, it's like all the chimps that manage everybody's money decided all at the same time, in the same instant, why don't we take the lunatic stocks, I mean the biggies like Apple and Amazon and Meta and Google, and absolutely obliterate them, and we'll buy the small cap stocks. So they did that, and what it suggests to me is that the bull market is not quite over. You know, as long as it's moving, there's not any real organic selling here. It's just a question of the money-managing chimps shifting capital from one vat to another. So I think that's where we are, and we've pretty much played out the corrections that I had projected in my Sunday. Every Sunday I put out a commentary, and it's been more technically oriented lately, but I saw a buying opportunity in the E-mini S&Ps if they came down to 54.20, and they've come down, they've had a huge tumble over 200 points, but they didn't quite get down to that 54.20 this morning. The low was 54.32, and that's an actual almost 300-point sell-off. So I think it's close enough that we've got this mechanical buy signal, and if the bull market were still healthy, which is possible, I would think this rally could get up to 5877. So that's a 360-point rally from here. That would be quite significant. But I'm having my doubts, and this could be, even though we've got this mechanical buy signal on in the E-mini S&Ps, we may not go for one last record high. We may only go one minor level here toward that high. So I'm open to the possibility that the bull market is over. And I do see the one stock that I care about, Microsoft, has yet to get down to where I thought it would correct to. I saw it coming down to at least 404. And so far, the low for this big sell-off in the lunatic stocks has only taken Microsoft down to 417. So it's good. Microsoft has further to go, and if it has further to go, then the broad averages have further to fall.
Well, facing Microsoft is their program CrowdStrike, which crashed hospitals, airports, airlines around the world with billions of dollars in damage done. Do you think they're going to be sued for it?
Oh, I think you can't really sue Microsoft in any meaningful way. They have too much money. Everybody can come at them for, you know, seeking trillions of dollars, but it's not going to make any difference. They'll never pay up anyway. And if it turns out to have been that software failure to be part of to have coincided with a major top in Microsoft, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. But I don't think the fallout from that's going to be particularly harmful to Microsoft.
So if they have to pay or are fined a billion or two, nothing to them?
No, that's not even, they don't even bat an eye when they're sued for $1 billion. Even when they have to pay it, it's nothing.
And of course, they'll tie it up in the courts until that money isn't worth anything anyway.
Yeah, plus, I don't know, I guess every American company's biggest headache is not here in the U.S., it's in other jurisdictions such as Europe. You know, Europe is always trying to level the playing field by just fining the crap out of any company that does business, any U.S. Company that does business there, which, because we're all linked on the internet now, every big company does business everywhere. So I guess the European regulators, they like to take their pound of flesh, and that could happen, but Microsoft has got plenty of flesh to contribute. You know, they could single-handedly float Europe's economy just by paying fines.
I was going to say they have standby vats of flesh.
Yeah, Microsoft, you cannot be completely defleshed. It's just too big.
What's going on with gold?
It's just a piece of caca. You know, gold is garbage mode right now. And in the context of a bull market, we have these stupid, gratuitous sell-offs. So today we're in a $60 sell-off in gold. And of course they occur every time Microsoft makes some sort of higher high on the chart. It's made three ascending highs since April, but only very marginally so. You know, each high was just a few bucks higher than the last. So we should have been ready for this gratuitous. Do you really have to beat, you know, just do the powers that be have to treat gold this nasty? But they did. This fall has come from, let's see, the high on gold was 25.12. That's basis the, I think it's the October contract. So I guess the next time up, the breakout is going to have to be for real, but the correction could come down to as low as 23.30. That's 50 bucks below this morning's low, just to test the previous lows. So it's a kind of bull market that's meant to challenge even the most ardent gold bulls, and that's what it's doing.
Is silver doing the same thing?
Yeah, silver it's getting hit pretty hard, but the 27.55 low today, that's per ounce basis of September COMEX contract, it got very close to the number I put out last week. So silver, both silver and gold look to me like they're near some sort of interim bottom. I don't think they're going to test the lows that have come off these highs that we've seen since April. Again, that would be down around 23.20 or so, 50, 60 points below. I'm not sure it's going to be that bad.
Anything going on with palladium and platinum?
Well, I can probably give you some specific numbers. Looking at September platinum, it's really come down like really hard. And let's see, just since over the last week or so, platinum was trading up around 1,025. Today we're trading at 939 at this moment, just to give you some idea of how bad it's been. I'm not really knowledgeable about the platinum market, although I did hear from someone. I'm in San Francisco now, which is the land of the stolen catalytic converter. And, you know, I've known people that I know who live here have had their catalytic converters stolen. They've had three or four of them stolen. But one of the solutions is that some of the manufacturers are putting less platinum in the catalytic converters. So I'm not quite sure whether that may have had a demand impact on prices. But yeah, platinum is falling pretty hard, and I'm not sure about palladium, but it usually follows in tandem.
Now, these people selling that stolen metal, do they have to show ID when they take it to a scrap yard and say, this is actually mine? Or can they just show up and dump it off?
No, that's it. that's the nice thing about being governed by Gavin Newsom. They don't really have to show any ID. They just go to whoever's fencing platinum, a reputable dealer, and there's no questions asked. I'm not quite sure. You know, they have that $1,000 limit. You can loot a store. You can you can probably take it an assault rifle in and loot a store, and no one really cares. So I think the platinum market is all kind of it's in a nice gray market there, and you don't have to show ID. I have a buddy here. I used to work for a private eye named Hal Lipset, and Buddy and I used to do surveillance work. And he told me a story that I hadn't read, really. He was hired by, I think it was Safeway, just to track down looters. And, of course, these are not the kind of looters that that are organized into gangs who go into the high-end stores and snatch $30,000 or $40,000 worth of designer pocketbooks and things. These are just sort of street people who go in and loot the pharmacy of Safeway or whatever. So Safeway, alone among all the California lootees, hired my friend to actually track down some of these guys. And one of them, if you can believe this, one of the looters actually got a 3-year sentence. So it wasn't a question of recovering the value of lost goods. It was really Safeway wanting to make a statement, and I guess they did, although it's not one that made it into the legacy newspapers.
And, I mean, when we talk about organized gangs, they found the same thing here in Vancouver. A group of 10, 12 people had hit a store all at once, and they've recovered tremendous amounts of material because police finally decided to crack down on it. I was wondering, is it a time, remember when Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York and his broken window policy, no crime too small to pursue if you want to wipe out all the bad crime? Do we have to go back to that?
Yeah, and I can't remember. I saw some reference to that involved a U.S. city. Was it Philadelphia, maybe? It was that same idea, Giuliani's broken window thing, which I can't remember. The idea wasn't original with Giuliani. I think he'd read a book that kind of inspired him on that idea, but it would seem that it may come back into vogue, the idea that you really got to do some diligent policing, because if you just let a little crime happen, it has a way of kind of taking over the neighborhood.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's going on with crude?
Well, it was sort of poised for a breakout today, but it didn't break out. It broke down. So I don't know. It looks like, you know, 6 months ago, we might have expected crude prices to be relatively docile as we went into the election season. And I think docile in this case, maybe crude, the price of gasoline came down 10 cents last week. So prices have been somewhat inflexible coming down. You know, when they shoot up, it takes a long time to get them back down to get the pump price back down to, well, depending on where you live, as low as $3 a gallon for regular. So crude could have gone either way, and for the time being, it's staying relatively placid here below 80. But I think you need a couple of closing bars above 80 to launch crude into the firmament. But I guess we can all be thankful that that hasn't happened, because, of course, whatever we feel in the way of inflation is always going to be exacerbated with higher energy prices. If the price of fuel goes up, the price of pretty much everything that happens on planet Earth goes up.
Uranium, is there still action there?
Still action. You know, the uranium story's been around for 60 or 70 years, and it's sort of like the coal story. And I don't know. I'm moderately bullish on it because the only way for this world to generate additional power in a way that's not going to be too harsh on the environment is with nuclear plants. And of course, they got the technology down so that there are smaller reactors that can be used locally. They're not quite as small as a toaster yet, but they can build small, relatively safe nuclear generators, and I think it's going to keep it's going to keep a floor under the uranium price.
Tesla, is it going to still be a major success, or are they hiding failures with the company by saying that cars have been ordered but then are put in parking lots in abandoned shopping malls across the U.S. Midwest?
Yeah, and see, we heard that story a long time ago when it was more fashionable to put the knock on Tesla. You know, there were all these cars that were untitled sitting in parking lots somewhere that there were drone photographs, but the stories turned out to be false. And of course, Tesla had quite a run when these negative stories lost their grip. So the stock's come down pretty hard since its last high. The high was in early July, up around 271, and we've come down to yesterday a low somewhere around 220. So it's come down pretty hard. But of course, the electric vehicle story has really it's turned savage. You know, I think it started with stories last summer about how difficult EVs made life if you were living in a place like Chicago and trying to get through Chicago winter. But now there's so many stories sort of piling on to EVs that you wonder why anybody would buy them even. There's the fact that you can't get them fixed because so many of the repairs involve chips that are unavailable. You know, my friend, a physician friend of mine had a Tesla Plaid, an expensive car. I think it was $135K, and the seatbelt stopped retracting, and the seatbelt was on the brains of it was some microchip, and they couldn't get the chip, so they gave him a whole new Tesla Plaid. So we know that there are not enough mechanics to work on Teslas. The body shops don't even want to touch them if there's damage to the batteries, and it's actually dangerous to work on those batteries unless you really know what you're doing. You can trigger quite an explosion and a fire that ordinary fire extinguishers won't put out. So there's so many things impacting on EVs that I wouldn't say the story's dead, but we have a conflict really between sovereign entities, governments that are pushing everybody toward EVs, but there's so many practical problems with them that there's going to be, there's a real storm brewing there.
The Cybertruck was being tested by a site, and they said after 1,300 miles, its steer-by-wire system crashed because they had a power failure. So the Cybertruck, you could just be driving, and if the battery disconnects or something like that, you have no steering.
Yeah, it's weird stuff, you know. I mean, if you've worked on, I had a BMW sort of when they first started being imported in the U.S. I had a '69 model 2000 four door, and when you take it was just really easy to work on. It required I had to change the points and plugs every 8,000 miles, new valve gasket, and you had to set the valves with the engine cold, and it was a routine, but at least you could do it. You know, it wasn't any great trick to set the ignition timing. So now we've got cars that are more and more like nobody can work on, really. The shops need very special diagnostic equipment to work on these cars. You open the hood, and there's really nothing nothing that I recognize any longer. So, I think the play there may be in Toyota, because they're probably the largest manufacturer that hasn't given up on internal combustion engine, regular engines. They're still planning to make internal combustion engine powered cars. So I think that'll give them a little bit of an edge over companies, BMW and Mercedes-Benz and the Japanese makers, and some of the other Japanese makers that went sort of whole hog in the direction of EV.
The Chinese, to get around 100% tariff on their EVs in the U.S., will they open factories in the USA?
I don't think so. You know, that was Japan was willing to do that because they saw themselves as a it was more than just a trading partner. I don't think the Chinese are that. Well, as I think of it, I don't know really what would motivate the Chinese other than profits. But the domestic market is so big that they really don't have to kowtow to U.S. demand. I mean, they don't have to sell a single EV in the U.S. to become a dominant producer of EVs. So I don't see China building car factories here in like the Japanese did.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, the main thing is that this rally that we're having right now off this morning's bottom, it may not get too far. You know, the bull market may be over, and it seemed like it was always inevitable that it would occur when, after all these years of waiting for it, the Fed finally does ease. You know, it seems predictable that when the Fed finally did ease, that would be the end of the bull market. And it's also predictable now that when they have that momentous announcement, yes, we're going to take the federal funds rate down by 25 basis points, it's going to have zero impact on the market. Or, you know, maybe the buy the rumor, sell the news reaction where everything falls on the initial announcement of a rate cut. So I think that's what's coming. And I guess just for timing of the end of the bull market, it almost seems too pat that it would happen when what Wall Street has wanted for years now, easing, finally happens. So I'm on full alert right now. Somewhat skeptical toward the rally we're seeing this morning.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It really was a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at House Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.